Today I'm talking to Andrew Roberts. You come from Surbiton. You've just navigated a journey with your mother through your father Peter's dementia. Your father was diagnosed with dementia in 2016. So good afternoon. Thank you so much for coming to talk to me on Radio Jackie. You received a huge amount of support from Rachel Carver. She's your local Alzheimer's Society dementia advisor. What were the first signs you noticed that alerted you to something was changing in your dad?
It's a difficult one because unless you've actually had any experience of dealing with someone with dementia, you kind of you're learning as you're going. But the obvious things were the, you know, the forgetfulness, you know, the fact that you were having to repeat yourself with dad, the fact that his short-term memory loss with dad was, it was becoming evident. I think with dad, the situation for me was slightly different because I started, so when dad was going through his diagnosis, I actually started accompanying dad to his medical appointments. So when he was going through his diagnosis, I would be with him with the consultant. So that was a real eye opener, you know. So it, for anybody that's ever that is with someone that suffers from dementia, I mean, the first time that you sit with that person, with a medical person, and you do a memory test, it's a real eye opener. So dad thought it was 1985 and it was 2015, you know, where they're asking him, you know, what country is he in, what day of the week it is, that sort of, how old is he? And he wasn't able, or he was coming up, he was making answers up because he didn't know. It was actually quite shocking. So it's quite helpful because it really does make you realise that, yes, this is a problem.
Yeah.
But at the time, quite shocking.
I suppose his forgetfulness starts to creep up on you quite slowly because obviously he's elderly. So you think, oh, well, he's just being forgetful. It's when those short-term memory losses, like walking into a room, not remembering, and we all do it, walking into a room, not remember we walked into it. But those become more and more significant, isn't it?
Yeah. I think the other thing is when you don't actually, so at this point, dad was being, so my mum was caring for my dad at home. I think the other thing that I would say is it's harder for someone that doesn't spend extended periods of time with someone who's starting to get dementia for you to actually notice. So to the point that you're making, you can put it down to, well, you know, he's just getting older. And we're all getting forgetful. But actually, if you spend extended periods, so like mum, you know, it was much easier for mum to see what was occurring because obviously she was, you know, she was looking after him.
Yeah. So you say you sat with your dad and with a consultant. How long did you wait before realising you needed this sort of help? Did you go to your GP first? What was your first port of call?
So I think, you know, I think this will resonate with a lot of, it may resonate with a lot of people. I think for a long time, mum felt it was her responsibility to look after dad. It was kind of her job. And I would say up until relatively recently, I mean, she was doing that full time. And for a long time, I would say we probably didn't realise how difficult it was for mum with dad. And then what I think what sort of accelerated things was, and I think mum was in finding it increasingly difficult to cope with, you know, with looking after dad. And I think at that point, I think it must have been my elder sister, actually. She knew Rachel or knew of Rachel and had just said, well, why don't we just try speaking to her to see what she says, which is probably over a couple of years ago now.
Yeah.
And it kind of went from there, really.
So once you were in contact with Rachel, how did the help progress? Did they show you lots of things, lots of other areas you could turn to help for? Did they provide those areas themselves? Did they just signpost you into all the things you might need to help your dad?
It's a good question. So I would say, so the initial meetings with mum, which I attended with Rachel, they were actually quite difficult because I think mum, as I say, mum saw it as her responsibility to look after dad. And I'm not sure, it did take her a little while to actually realise that there is help available and what does that help involve? And then how do we actually go about doing something about it. So the initial engagements with Rachel, I think with Mum, were a little bit difficult, because I think Mum, you know, they're very private people, and it's not easy to get people to start talking about these sorts of things. I mean, fast forward to now, Mum of her own volition regularly calls Rachel for support, and she just talks about how Dad is, she talks about how she is. And, you know, so she does that of her own volition, because Rachel's been through it, and she's so kind and understanding, patient, empathetic. But back to how we got started. I mean, so we started with Dad with it. So the first thing that Rachel suggested was, well, why don't we try and get a companion for Dad? So we would get, there's a number of organizations that you can contact where someone would go once a week and just spend a couple of hours with Dad. So Mum could go out and just do a bit of shopping, or go and get her hair done or something. So we started with that, but progressed to, have you completed your powers of attorney? Because, you know, that's important that you do that. Have you thought about attendance allowance for Mum? It's extended to her having contacts in the care world. So Dad is now in full-time care, but the people that we needed to speak to try to be able to facilitate that, she knew. So what I would say is, you know, we have engaged more and more over time. And with Rachel, it's always been, you know, it's very practical advice. And she's always provided advice in sort of what I would say bite-sized chunks, so not too much at once, and so as not to overwhelm you. So I would say that there's two, I would make two important distinctions. There's the caring for the loved one, which is Dad, and there's the whole process associated with what can we do to help ourselves. And basically, Rachel's done both. So, you know, she's always been, because she's been through this with her Dad, you know, she's always been very understanding. She understands what dementia involves in terms of watching someone deteriorate and what you can expect and things that you can try to do to help. So if you have no experience of someone with dementia, I mean, you really don't know what to do, and you don't know how the disease manifests. But as I've mentioned earlier, she's also been helpful in terms of, you know, the associated processes of us helping ourselves.
Yeah.
So the attendance allowance, you know, do your powers of attorney, you know, how do you integrate into the care network, you know, central surgery in Surbiton where she works. You know, she's very close to one of the GPs there who's a dementia specialist, so he's been instrumental in enabling our access to that person, you know, when we have questions about where Dad is. So it started slowly, but once trust and confidence was built, particularly with Mum, it sort of progressed. It's progressed over the last few years to the point now where, as I said at the start, Mum now calls Rachel of her own volition to get support.
Yeah. So I think probably from what you're saying is Rachel has made the process much more easy to manage, probably helped you not feel like you were the only ones in this situation, that you're one of many. And with her expert guidance, it sounds like you've been signposted as a family, because your mum suffered too. She obviously probably felt in the initial stages that she was being criticised, maybe for not doing enough, or maybe a bit sidelined, or she had those sorts of feelings.
I think, I don't know, I think like a lot of people, Mum was what was called a hidden carer. So the system didn't know that Mum existed, because it had never been made, there'd never been any contact made with, you know, with the health system or the NHS or whatever, that Mum was doing what she was doing in terms of looking after Dad. And I think there's an awful lot of people that are in the same situation. So, you know, so Dad's surgery, I mean, the GP would know, but does the NHS know, you know, do the authorities know that Mum exists in terms of the job that she's doing? And the answer was no, because what she was called was a hidden carer. And I think there's an awful lot of people that are in the same, I suspect there's an awful lot of people that are in the same situation. I think Mum found it, you know, and again, from that generation, I think people just see it as their responsibility to look after their partner as they get older, and they just do it without question. To get them open to, well, how do we help ourselves? Because if you're not actually in as good a place as you can be, you're not going to be able to look after, you know, your partner. It just took a bit of time for Mum to realise that actually this was an okay path, you know, for us to go down.
Yeah, going back to your comment about hidden carers, there are a huge amount of hidden carers.
There are.
And they, you know, when you're caring for somebody that you're married to, that you love, who's in your family, you feel duty bound to do it yourself, and you don't think you need help sometimes, or you don't want to admit you need help, and also you don't know where to look for help. So you're in this sort of, you know, situation where, I mean, I don't know, how old are your parents?
So Dad's going to be 90 this year. Mum's a little younger than Dad. So you know, the situation has progressed. Dad's now in full-time care. So he's, for the last probably coming up to 2 years, he's been in a care home.
Was that a big decision for your mum to say, OK, I think the best place for him is in a care home because they're more capable of attending to his needs and helping him?
I think, yeah. So I think, again, as can happen, so from talking to the medical professionals, what happened to Dad is quite common. So for some reason, he started having a series of falls at home, so was then in and out of hospital, and his condition deteriorated significantly as a result. So his dementia accelerated significantly. He became a lot more frail, you know, so he was falling out of bed at home and he couldn't get himself up and Mum couldn't get him up. So, I was having to go around there with my son and try and get Dad up off the floor. And that happened over and over. And quite quickly, we came to the conclusion that, you know, in the best interest of Dad's health and welfare, it just wasn't practical or sensible for him to be at home anymore because Mum just couldn't physically look after him. And we initially put Dad into the home that he's now in, and we said, look, let's put him in there for a month for a period of respite, because Mum also had COVID at the same time, which you know, so she was quite ill. But during that time, it just became evident that it was in Dad's, however difficult, it was in Dad's best interest for him to be in the home where he's safe, he's looked after, he's fed, a place that is sort of relatively close to home that we can, where we can go and visit, you know, and that he's surrounded by an environment, he's in an environment where people are specifically designed to provide that level of support. And he's never come out. He's still there.
And how's your mum? How's she coping with not having him at home with her? Is it suddenly, has he realised that obviously it is the best place for him, but has it been a hard one for her to cope with not having him around?
I suspect, well, I mean, they've been married over 60 years. So, you know, it's been a huge change for them. I mean, I know, as we all have, but I mean, Mum has really struggled with seeing, you know, the deterioration in your life partner. So it has been a big adjustment, a huge adjustment. I think she's realistic enough to realise that whether she liked it or not, it just wasn't possible anymore for Dad to be at home. And therefore, you know, what we've done is in his best interest. And fortunately, the place that we found is, you know, is walking distance for Mum from where they live. So she's able to go and see him regularly. But it's a huge change.
I'm sure. Well, Andrew, thank you so much for talking to me. I'm sure lots of people will be listening to this and thinking maybe we're getting to that situation. Maybe they're in the situation. So I suppose in a couple of sentences, can you sum up how valuable it was to get a hold of your local Alzheimer's Society dementia advisor and how easy it was?
Yeah, I mean, it was easy. I mean, I think if you go onto the website, they were very responsive. Rachel came to see us very quickly. I would say to people, look, you know, don't struggle in silence. Don't suffer in silence. You know, there is help out there from people that have gone through what you're about to go through, because it's terrible. I mean, watching a loved one deteriorate, and also I'm trying to get your head around, you know, how to navigate through the system in terms of the things that you can do to help. So I would say the most important thing is to make that first step and contact Rachel or the Rachel equivalent, because if our experience is repeated, and I'm sure it is over and over, once you do that, you never look back, and the support that we've been provided has been invaluable.
Well, thank you, that's a very honest answer, and it's a very good answer, and I'm sure it will help lots of people. So I'll let you go now. Thank you so much for coming to talk to me on Radio Jackie.
Thank you very much. Same to you. Bye bye.
Thank you. Bye for now.